fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, revolution, revolution. Radio! Radio.
Are you coming to the train, led by a man who wants to break the chains? Establishment is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out for a wall built by crane? Media is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out the fools who lead in vain? Lobbyists are terrified, they can't control our reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train? Wear a hat of hope, side by side with me. Make America great again, break the chains. Let's meet this year on the Trump train.
And we are going to be respected by the world again and not laughed at like we're all a bunch of stupid people being led by incompetent politicians. It's not going to go on any longer.
Are you coming to your train to take our great country back again? Join the revolution, break the chains. Let's meet this year on a Trump train.
We're going to win at the borders. We're going to win, and we're going to keep winning. And we are going to make America great again, greater than ever before.
July 16th, 2023. This is Dr. Johnny, and let's help keep the truth alive and be generous with your contribution to Revolution Radio. Dr. Johnny gives every month through the Patreon account that I started, and you can set one up too. Just set one up on freedomslips.org and automatically donate $5 per month. It's so easy. And if you don't send a donation to Revolution Radio, please send a generous donation to Dr. Johnny. We've really been working hard to get you the truth and the news you can use. So your donation will really be appreciated and keep Dr. Johnny on the air. And if you only have a phone and you want to hear my show, you can call 641-793-2531 every Sunday at 3 o'clock Central Standard Time. And if you're on your computer, just go to freedomslips.org and scroll down to Studio B every Sunday at 3 o'clock Central Standard Time and click on the little green arrow right under Studio B and hear Dr. Johnny live. Welcome to the Master Survivor Beyond PhD, where Dr. Johnny will bring you hope, health, and happiness. But most important of all, the truth about our world and give you the tools to help you survive and thrive. I'm your host, Johnny Delirious, laboratory naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, and virus recovery expert. Well, folks, I got a little surprise for you today. I'm going to honor one of the requests of my listeners who wanted to hear my alien abduction. She says, you should have a whole show telling about your alien abduction, how it happened, so everybody will know. Well, I'm not only going to do that, but I'm going to do better than that. In fact, I'm going to tell you not only about the alien abduction that I had in 1989, but how the group mind of the Grays taught me to be a master survivor. And that's right. I am Johnny Delirious, laboratory naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, and virus recovery expert. I've been a professional in the health industry for over 40 years. I was born in 1953. You're going to hear it all. And raised in Northwest Florida. My father was a medical doctor, and after teaching at Tulane, he was the first doctor in Fort Walton Beach, where I grew up, which was a small fishing village at that time. In 1984, I was vice president and controller of Davenport Laboratories in Addison, Texas. I'm just moving right into where I was in the lab because the abduction happened there. We provided elemental analysis of hair, urine, and water for over 489 health practitioners and professionals. From these results, we supplied the medical doctors with dietary and nutritional supplement recommendations. We also did water testing of all the U.S. Navy and Dallas County Schools water fountains. I was excited about this business, and I designed our first water test kit for the lab and improved on all the protocols, including the diet and that nutritional recommendations. I rewrote the whole protocol, and my director signed off on it. He said, this is a whole new methodology, so I became chairman of the lab at that point. Now, the doctor's patients responded well to the treatment and the you know, diet and supplement recommendations, and the lab was top-rated with the Clinical Laboratory Institute of America. However, Johnny's life was going downhill fast. Why? Well, I did not know I had hepatitis C, and it was killing me, and I was out of energy. I quit coffee because it was burning my stomach. But I'm from the beaches of Florida, and you know, if I did not want coffee to pick me up, I'd get a little powder in my nose, and in plain English, I started using cocaine. A quick snort of coke gave me that quick pep to get me through the meetings and the work at the lab, but it's habit forming. Then in 1989, I was abducted by American military and gray alien, ET gray aliens. My alien abduction happened only one time. I have not had any experience with aliens before that December night in 1989. I've had plenty afterwards, but before December of 1989, that was my only time. The events leading up to it, that experience, were very significant. And I want to give you the background and want to try to set the stage as to what was happening during that time managing the laboratory and after work. Well, several serious circumstances escalated. On the positive side, my responsibilities had doubled since I moved from being vice president and controller to chairman of Davenport Laboratories. Jim Davenport was real excited. I was working hard, and I loved my job. I took it seriously. On the negative side, I was getting tired and out of energy from hepatitis C that was unknown to me at that time. So, to get the energy back, a little pep, I started using cocaine. A dumb thing to do, but my cocaine use increased, and so did some of the bad habits, like going to strip clubs late at night after work to pick up some pleasure. One particular night before Christmas in 1989, it was warmer than most winter nights, and I only wore a light jacket. I'll never forget that night for the rest of my life. This experience was so extraordinary that there are hardly words to describe it. I'd been at the club, and I wanted Brenda to come home with me, but I had no luck. By 3 o'clock a.m., I left the club and drove home with a fresh purchase of high-purity cocaine. I had to drive carefully because I was loaded and in possession of cocaine. Arriving in my driveway, I pressed the automatic door button. The garage opened, and I pulled in and closed the garage door behind me. I got out of my car and, you know, with the shoulder strap leather briefcase, just put that across my shoulder and went up into the house, into the kitchen. But I didn't get that far. Once I got to the door of the kitchen and hit the button to close the back garage door, I heard a loud humming sound. It sounded like the hum of a microwave oven, kind of like that, except louder. And I could not tell if the hum was in the house, outside, in the garage, or in my head. I held my ears, and the noise was still there, just the same intensity. I began to seriously question the quality of the cocaine I had been doing that night. Was it really that good, or was it really bad? Then I realized I had not been walking, or could not walk. I was frozen, standing halfway just inside the door. After coming in from the garage, it seemed like I was frozen in time, as if someone pressed the pause button on the videotape of my life experience. Then the humming got louder. The last thing I remember was everything grew bright all around my head and enveloped my body. The humming and the white light got so loud and so bright that the next thing I knew, I was floating. I was floating in a room that had nothing inside. Where was I? The walls were plain and difficult to see. It was as if there was nothing there. The room had no corners either. For some reason, I did not panic. I just didn't panic. Maybe it's because I thought I was having a spiritual experience, or perhaps I was dead and gone through that tunnel of light or whatever. Or was I just high on coke? To this day, I am really not sure why I did not get scared. I was not hot, nor I was cold. This was really strange, mainly because I was overwhelmed more with curiosity than with fear. Some of the thoughts in my mind were maybe I died, and that was why I was not hot or cold. Maybe that's why there was no form to this place. I couldn't see anything. I kept wondering why I was not scared. I couldn't believe that. This is strange because usually when something out of the ordinary happens and you're high on cocaine, you will get paranoid. It just goes with the territory. But I wasn't. I wasn't scared at all. I was very self-assured. Surely I must be dead, I thought. Eventually, the environment changed in the place that I was in, but I did not know where I was. Soon, I started to put things together. The brightness and the hum soon settled in my head. It's like it all came to my head and stopped. It seemed like my environment was beginning to stabilize around me, but from what? I did not know. Soon I noticed I was being held because I could now see things around me. There were others, about six men strapped onto the beds, these gurney with wheels. But I was weightless, floating around. I kept wondering, why are they all men? There's no women. And why are they stationary in the beds? And I was just floating around. This is really strange. As things cleared up even more, I could see and hear activity. I had to wonder, are things clearing up in my mind? So I was able to see what was going on around me, or did the light and the mist physically clear up so I could start seeing things? Was it all in my head, all outside of me, or both? It was kind of like being knocked out in a fight. Eventually, you come back to consciousness. You know, the little birds are tweeting around. And eventually, you come back and realize what happened and where you are. However, in this situation, I hadn't been punched, but for some reason, I came back to consciousness. Strange. Then I realized I was aboard a craft of some sort. It's taken me a while, decades really, to put all this together, much less tell about it. As things cleared up, I was floating around in this little, in my little room that went all the way around. It was like I was inside this little donut. I could see out the walls. We were in space. This was a ship, and there were human military guys with little gray alien types in the middle of the ship. I was outside in the periphery. I was outside their compartment, and I was floating around. Whereas they were standing, they seemed to have gravity in their little place. Apparently, we left Earth in a smaller reconnaissance craft. I could see we left orbit, and we were heading toward the moon. I say our moon because I recognize the Sea of Tranquility. Everything was confusing. I was weightless, and that's weird in of itself. And that is a strange feeling, always wanting to orient yourself in the beginning. I was unsure what was going on and did not believe what I was witnessing. It seemed like I drifted in and out of consciousness. Just like drifting in and out, just like drifting around the ship, I was drowsy and sleepy, which is very strange since cocaine is a stimulant, and I just had to get another big snort to increase my alertness. So I did just that. You know, I remember when I arrived in my garage, it seemed like 15 minutes ago or so, it seemed. This was a different influence in my brain, this whole experience. I was not scared at all, but I did not know where I was, but I felt fine. This is really strange. Looking back on it more than 35 years later, maybe it was some sort of mind control, but at the time I was thinking, gosh, this Bolivian flake is really euphoric. Floating around, I was soon able to see out the window. It really wasn't a window. I could see through the wall. On one side, I could see the earth because I floated all the way around. I could go all the way around inside my little donut compartment, and I would float by the guys in the gurneys strapped down. I could see Earth in the distance on one side, and then going around to the other side of the ship, I could see our moon, and it was our destination. Wow, this is really strange to say the least. The moon grew bigger and bigger and bigger, and it seemed that within seconds we were there. On the other side of the ship, I could see the Earth getting smaller, and it was getting tiny. I couldn't figure out how I was able to see outside. There were no windows as we know them. It was like the wall was invisible, or I could see through it, or there were no walls or ceiling. The floor wasn't flat. The floor had ribs like beams in a boat hull, except it was metal with a kind of an aluminum color. As we got closer, I could see and focus on the moon and other things that were going on. I was sure my eyes were playing tricks on me. They probably really got big when I realized the shocking truth. Yes, it was the moon, all right, but there was also this big craft, many miles long. I wasn't able to tell how big it was, because as we got closer, it seemed to be getting so big, like when we went to the Grand Canyon, it was huge, you know. But there it was. It had a bulb shape on one end, and the rest of the ship was long, you know, cylindrical diameter, and consisted of about 80% of the length. It was round on the other end too, except without the larger bulb. And I thought, I must be totally going crazy. My emotions went from humor to serious thinking about the bright light that I came out of. I worried I'd died or that I was really losing my mind. Think, Johnny, think! Get a hold of yourself! Think! I was thinking when I go on scuba diving, the last thing you want to do is panic when you're 150 or 180 feet under. That's the cardinal rule. Never panic. So I went back to my scuba diving days. I said, all right, think. Don't panic. Yeah, I thought I was going crazy, all right, but this hallucination would not go away. It was a cigar ship, mothership, that was huge, many miles long. When we got close enough to see the other craft of all sizes going in and away from the mothership, as we got closer, it was so big that it blocked out the moon and everything else. We still had a ways to go. That was the other thing I saw. Top to bottom on the side of my view, the other side I could see the Earth. But when I look at the mothership, ships were flying all around in and out of it. I couldn't see why they wouldn't collide. They were just going everywhere. They were teeny, tiny in comparison when it seemed like the ship I was in was little, probably just like theirs. They're all similar, except many of them were saucer-shaped. Others were rounded triangles that looked like a rattlesnake's head. If you've ever seen a rattlesnake's head, it's like a rounded arrowhead. I thought it was like a beehive, because all the ships were like bees coming and going. It was not tens, but hundreds, or maybe a thousands of ships swarming in and out like bees. All my humor stopped. My laughter did not sit well with a couple of the American military types on board. I heard their ridicule, but they left me alone. This was not funny. This was not a good situation. Then I thought, what were they going to do with me? I looked around at the others on the gurneys who were strapped in but were kept unconscious or were asleep or whatever. They just never woke up. But for some reason, they let me float around. At times, I had my full faculties. At other times, it seemed like I'd black out and wake myself up, kind of like when you're snoring too loud and you wake yourself up in the middle of the night. All this happened even though I was under the influence of cocaine. Then I heard the soldiers talking. And one guy said, it was kind of like a Nebraska accent, okay? I've been to Nebraska. I've been to Iowa. It was that type of accent. And one guy said, those guys are 319s, the one strapped down in the floater, he's a 309. Then all three were looking right at me. The other guy was talking, said, really? A 309? We don't see many of those. I discovered what a 309 is after one soldier asked. Apparently, it's a military designation of people under the influence. I learned what a 309 stood for. The first number, 3, meant the users of less than 3 drugs. I guess for me, it was alcohol, cocaine, you know. Because I really wasn't using any other drugs. It was just coke and a little bit of alcohol at the club. The second number was 0, which meant I was never arrested. The third number was 9, which stood for the minimal years of use. Well, maybe the 319s, the 319s were arrested and then abducted, and that's why they got the 1 in the middle. I did not know anything for sure, but they were strapped in and I was the floater. Apparently, I was in a special group. I used only cocaine every day as well as an occasional light alcohol, like 1 or 2 beers at the club. The booze helped calm me down when I wanted to sleep or relax. I never used the other drugs in the 1980s. Before that, it was different, but all in the 1980s doing the lab. I was serious about doing the lab, so I really kept it together. But I did all my experimenting in the 70s. Now it's just cocaine. Soon our craft entered a passage on the side of the ship where the bulb of the one end started, and I'm not sure what happened after that, but soon after that, and after waking up, I was in my own room and on my feet. I was not floating anymore. I did not know what happened to our craft or the mothership, but maybe we parked inside it. Now I must be inside the mothership, I figured, because I saw the same military guys that were on my little craft. But it did not have windows, and I could not see. So my little room was there, didn't have windows, but just outside the room, I could go out in the main place, and it did have windows, and I could see the moon out the windows there. We were circling in low orbit. I could see structures on the surface of the moon there, especially where the dark side and the light side meet. It was so clear and so easy to see. In many places, I could see that the surface was made of metal, and the rocks and dirt made up the mountains on top of it. One place, I saw a tower. It was like a big, huge skyscraper, again, with a bulb or, you know, the bigger part at the top. Then something really blew my mind. It seemed like the moon was a metal ball covered with dust. Strange. This is the moon? It was unmistakable. The moon was an artificial object. To this day, I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt, places like the Sea of Tranquility, that's all clean. That was the barren part of this aluminoid metal surface. The other parts that had little mountains and dust, that was the parts that it covered, but there's parts of the moon, like the Sea of Tranquility, that did not have any dirt or anything on it, and you could just see the metal right there. It was obvious. You could see when objects came in from space, they broke into bits, and not much of it of a crater on the metal at all. Instead, they made a crater in the dust covering it on different parts. That metallic surface was dirty and dusty with space debris, and it seemed harder and more solid than the thickest steel. Those were some of the things that Dr. Johnny had to accept as real. I thought to myself, is this why it's been 40 years and we never publicly announced we were going back to the moon? How would they explain that the moon was an ancient space station? They will not. Maybe that is why we've never overtly or publicly gone back to the moon. Then I realized that, you know, once I was in my little room, I wasn't alone. I mean, the military guys brought me to this little room and then closed the door. And, you know, we had gravity, so we were walking around like normal instead of floating. There was a very small humanoid sitting at a little desk with a screen. His head was the biggest part of his body. Most people would call him a gray. It seemed to not want to bother me. In fact, he or it seemed okay as long as I left him alone. I could not figure it out because why was I not scared? I started getting closer to him or it, and it was okay. I just moved very slowly. I kept thinking that as long as I'm really calm, everything would be all right. So I just tried to be as still as I could as I got closer. The ideas and images started popping in my head more than I could grasp. It was kind of like Star Trek doing the alien mind melt. Except I was not touching him at all. I thought, wow, maybe this is what telepathy is. I just wasn't sure. So much was coming into my mind, I couldn't understand most of it. Even years later, more things unfolded from my memory of this encounter. So I just called this whole experience on the mothership the alien mind melt or group mind experience. Now just remember, this is 1989. Some of the things I learned from the group mind were: the secret military were Americans trying to learn how to command and pilot these remote ships. They worked with the aliens to do that. Also, the U.S., the secret military, had anti-gravity technology. They had the science of non-fuel propulsion. They even had the technology from reverse engineering some of the alien craft to create travel through time and dimensions into wormholes, into supra-physical dimensions. What they did not have was the expanded capacity of the human brain to actually run and navigate these ships or the transport to its transport to the destination and come back in order to report reconnaissance. So most of this exotic technology was useless for tactical purposes. But there was so much more I saw. Things like what addiction really is, who runs the world and who corrupted all the religions, how America is the last place of freedom and how it's on the path of destruction, and much more, all in 1989. The gray was sitting at his little screen, but I saw so much more in my mind where I saw how the grays telepathically put in the software where they were going. The computer would put all the data from the locations and map the route through physical or superphysical, i.e. wormholes, etc., and then either project it out into a three-dimensional hologram or visually and or download it directly into their brain via their fingers. It would be just like us getting the Google Map directions loaded right in our brains so we would know which directions to take and right away know where to go and without even thinking about it. It's like we already had it instantly. Like a GPS set with a destination that would take you there. But this was long before they had GPS available to the public. This is before cell phones. This was before laptop computers. This is before personal computers. This was in 1989. But to do this, the grays had expanded their brain capacity and function, developing transducers to remotely connect. They have the capability to interface and integrate with computers or just by sticking their finger in the small electronic holster to either download or upload anything. The first thing I was wondering is why they wanted me. Then in my mind, answers started coming. I found out through the mind melt, this group mind of the greys, that the military was very interested in guys like me who would constantly stay high on cocaine for months at a time and not be caught by the police or go to sleep, plus run in a laboratory. Since coke was a stimulant, I used it up so much, you know, I used up so much of my endorphins or dopamine. They thought these men like me must have a superior or exceptional or abnormal neurological function ability, such as a genetic abnormality that I could replace my dopamine and endorphins. They wanted to understand that and replicated that. Either the military could use the information or the black projects could figure out how to make their own pilots and adapt this capability, minus the cocaine, of course. There are only four others that I saw beside myself, and we all were given an implant in our left hand and our index finger. I don't remember exactly when or how I got one, but before I left the ship, I had a bandage on my left index finger, and when I held it to my ear, it made a hum. I could hear it. When I held it close to my ear, the hum was louder. So my finger was making this hum from the implant that they put in there because they had a bandage on my left index finger, and it made a hum. I learned this was connected directly to my nerve endings like a wiretap to my brain. I learned later also it had the capability of transmission, this implant of transmission and reception of microwave signals, similar to what cell phones do today when receiving texts or calls or documents. This has taken me over 20 years to put some reasonable understanding of this together. The goal was to remotely tap into our brains for data input, experience the extraction or delivery of orders or reprimands. It was the ultimate mind control for piloting a mission or for punishment. I did not know which, and I concluded it was for both. The other goal was to develop a way humans could pilot the craft on their own, as well as interfacing with the ship's computers, guidance, and propulsion systems. It was difficult to compress and understand thousands of years of intellectual evolution, as well as the goals of our secret military, in such a short period of time, but I was gathering bits and pieces as much as I could. So many things were popping into my head. Whenever I had a question, it seemed like this was how to keep the information flowing. I'd pose a question, and boom, the answers would flow right into my brain. Soon, I would learn a new way of communication. I would pose a question in my mind, and soon the answers would come. Then in the ship, things were changing around me. I found myself being moved to another place. One of the military guys grabbed me. I was cooperative because I was high, and plus he is big and mean. But even more so because I kept hearing terrified screams that sound like human males being tortured. I also heard people yelling what sounded like German to me because I recognized some of the words like schnell, schnell, which is a German word for hurry up. And then I heard the screams again after they were yelling, "Snow!" This is horrible. But I still wasn't scared. That was what was really so strange to me. It just seemed like I was going to be all right. I kept wondering why I did not worry. Then I found myself alone again. I figured everything was out of my control anyway. So by this time, I started hearing several speaking German and screams again. I could not tell where they were. I decided I was just going to snort some more coke. What I got to lose? I just wanted to feel better. What I did, what did I have to lose, you know? So I knew I could get high, right? And I took a quick blast in each nostril, and that was enough because I had that chalky feeling in the back of my throat. An American soldier saw me snorting and then came over, and I quickly put my bottle and straw up back in my bag, and he grabbed me and moved me again. I was in another room, much bigger, looking similar to a movie theater, except it just had the stage and no seats. When I first got there, I saw some other humans in the military fatigue speaking American English. I asked the soldier who brought me there, "Why are those other guys strapped down and why am I here?" And he wasn't very nice to me and yelled back, "Because they don't blast their brains out with coke for months at a time like jerks like you." I looked back at him with fear, and then he said, "Yeah, I know you have at least a half an ounce of coke. And it was up to me, I'd kick your ass." But I had the strangest feeling, and I said, "So you don't mind if I get high?" And he let go of me, and he started walking away, and he turned around. He said, "My orders are to let you do whatever the F you want, you sorry piece of crap." When he was gone, I was in a real quandary. Seemed like I got along with the Greys better than I got along with the Americans. I did not know what was happening around me. All these other victims were strapped down, and I heard screams in the other rooms, German voices in the background, and this G.I. Joe guy was telling me whatever I wanted to do, I could do, just go around anywhere you want. I was confused, all right. In fact, I was downright perplexed. I looked around, and I could see some of the other captives who were strapped down on beds in special compartments. I left them alone because I did not want to start any kind of problems. I kept thinking, like when I was scuba diving, you know, and you're in deep water, the last thing you want to do is panic. And I kept thinking to myself, "Don't panic, don't panic." Just like those deep water dives, I kept in mind and kept on point. And I also got to thinking that maybe this was a test to see what I would do. Maybe they are observing my behavior. I wandered all over the ship. Another sobering and grisly fact, I discovered that, you know, many of the missing children in our country and our world were taken to serve projects like this, as there were people in prisons. There's an endless human resource supply, young and old. For some reason, I started to understand that some of these implants were made of semi-organic material, and one important innovation was to insert thousands of terabytes of capacity that could make the human brain part computer for interface to advance the individual's overall capacity and capability. The parts would morph into being, you know, as you grow up and just become part of you, and truly you would be the $10 million man. I was thinking briefly, that's where so many of these missing children go. It seemed like that the project had success with some of these cyber advanced kids, and some of them were on the mothership and were in their teens getting pilot training. Some I saw pass through my section were sort of human, I guess. Their heads were bigger than normal. One guy, if he was yellow, you would call him Tweety Bird. Another guy looked like he was from the cover of a muscle magazine. I did not wander far, but I did walk around observing. One thing I could not figure out was why I wasn't floating. Was I back on Earth? No. Because I could look out the window and I could see the moon, you know, and we were close to the moon. So many things were beginning to pop in my head. I was still in this strange situation. I figured that the outcome and success of such studies like this would give the secret military an edge and unlimited possibilities, not having, you know, the perfect, you know, now not having the perfect, not only having the perfect soldier that really wasn't human because he's like a hybrid, but also finally preparing a pilot with the meta intellectual capacity to fly these highly advanced craft and to integrate these advanced technologies into our military. I put the whole story together in my new book. Yep, The Master Survivor Beyond PhD. That's my new book I've got coming out. I'll be telling the full story at a lecture I'm going to give in September, and I'll give you more details on that. But then, getting back to Dallas, I had to get off the coke, and I went to AA. And for the first time in my adult life, straight and sober, black and white, nuts and bolts, I had to accept the fact that the hepatitis was killing me and I might check out of life at any time. Family and friends were not very supportive. They saw me as a failure, talking about aliens being hooked on cocaine. I refused the liver transplant the doctors told me to do. They really did not believe a word I said. And I was certainly going to die. What transpired in the months and years ahead was a complete rejuvenation and a renaissance of my life. Everything I knew and experienced. Oh, yeah. The key was recovery in my body, mind, and spirit. I was serious and began a comprehensive program. I was going to AA every day and started a new style of Kung Fu. I was really getting a second bachelor's degree, and I became a local director at my church, and all taking place back home in Pensacola, Florida in 1993. I moved back to my roots, by the ocean, surfing when there was a swell, swimming when it was calm, and fishing on the other days when I was at the ocean. My work had only just begun. I lived in a small apartment right next to the University of West Florida, and usually walked to class in the communications college. I majored in public speaking, journalism, and minored in politics. I worked hard and did many research projects. Part of my personal research was finding ways to get over hepatitis C. In 1992, I refused the interferon and liver transplant because I did not do the surgery or what the doctors told me to do. They said I was delirious. So conventional medicine was out. I had to find another way. In 1993, the internet was just brand new, but available at the university computer lab, and I used it to research far and wide on, you know, herbs and liver therapies and hepatitis. It seemed to me that if I could get my immunity response strong enough, I could fight off the virus and succeed in my recovery. I dove in every kind of healing modality that existed. I even went to the Gerson Clinic. Charlotte Gerson and I became big buddies. I even tried hyperbaric oxygen. And like the Gerson therapy, there was no change in my viral load. I went from 12 million viral load down to 5.4 million viral load, and no change after that. To be successful, I had to change the protocols I was doing, and just like I did in the lab. In short, I created a whole new methodology for healing that today is called the Master Survivor Program. The inspiration came from a profound dream I had when I was at the Gerson Therapy in the Gerson Clinic at Playa Rosarita. In the dream, I helped a medical doctor recover from hepatitis C. I was showing him the therapy to follow and recovery from hepatitis C. In the dream, I said, I already recovered, and I can help you recover too. And he asked me where I found out all these secrets. It didn't make sense. He didn't hear of some of this before ever in his life. And he says, how did you find out about this? I told him I found a new healing protocols and methodology that later became the Master Survivor Program, and from what I gleaned from the group mind of the Grays. seeing the look on his face, on that medical doctor's face in the dream, woke me up. I was in a sweat of joy. In the dream, everything I was telling him was familiar, but had some points that I didn't recognize because this was 1994, and I'd come back in the, you know, I had not been back in the group Mind of the Gray since my abduction in 1989. I took lots of notes, and I have so many memories of it, and I jotted down. I filled over 14 spiral notebooks, but the dream was prophetic, and it showed me that I used some of that data I found from the group Mind. This was so dramatic and positive, and seeing that look on his face in the dream woke me up in a sweat of joy. Getting back home, I immediately grabbed and reviewed my 14 spiral notebooks where I wrote down about my experience during the group Mind of the Grays and alien during my abduction. And it did not take long. All of a sudden, I went back into the group Mind and what I call today the Resourcery Archive to find more answers. As I clarified my memory, everything started floating again, but this time it was not with cocaine. I was straight. Over 2 years, I was straight, and I was strong. To my amazement, I could utilize the group Mind of the Grays much easier. As I probed with questions, the answers would come back to me instantly. Wanting to use the new therapy, then I saw from my dream, and I upgraded all the protocols. I recognized some of the things that I found out, and you know, from the dream that I had, and I learned in the lab and in the natural health system that I studied. I gathered new techniques of how to make the therapy more effective. Now I had the best of the best from all my research in natural healing in the laboratory, from my Swiss grandmother, and from the group Mind of the Grays. Then I formulated a completely new methodology. Today I call that methodology the Master Survivor Program. With all of it upgraded and put into practice, I found what really worked. In less than 2 months, in the summer of 1994, I went from 5.4 million viral load to hepatitis C virus load to none detected in 2 months on my new program. And I studied for over 3 years working and nothing happened. I get hit 5.4 million viral load and no response. Nothing changed. But in 2 months on my new methodology, I healed up with no viral load, and by the holidays, I had no antibodies of any kind of hepatitis. It was the best Christmas present I ever had. This was so profound and ironic because it reminded me when I first upgraded the protocols of the lab, it became the new procedure manual, and this is what I sold to NASA, and they are now using in lab testing in the orbital space stations around the Earth. To get well here on Earth, I had to upgrade all the protocols that I learned from natural health modalities and the Greek form of healings. And these key revisions that I found in the alien group Mind and in the orbital mothership around the moon, sometimes I can't believe it's all real because it is because I had, you know, right there on the lab test, no antibodies of any kind of hepatitis, plus my cirrhosis also got completely gone. That in of itself is beyond anybody's belief that I knew. It proves to me that it was only real, that it was all real. Not only real, but there was so much more. My abduction was not even my choice, and it turns out that what I learned from it helped me to truly recover. Now with 3 Bachelor of Arts degrees, master's degree, and 2 PhDs, you know, it was in all these endless certifications that made me wonder why I studied all those years in the college and universities at all. Was it really useful? Was it really good to have all those fancy degrees and all those systems and practices if it did not show me how to get well? I still struggle with that today. My new protocol is way, way out of the normal realm of healing that we find anywhere else. And it brought for me, a better way of life and more valuable than any PhD. It was the Bastard Survivor Program. There's no better way to rise above the suffering of humanity than to lift yourself out of its own misery. The Bastard Survivor Program is a dream bigger than any of us, one that no one can criticize, one that will never, ever be tarnished. Becoming a Master Survivor is that dream. A proven therapy backed by laboratory science and honed for over 40 years into a flawless, daily, simple discipline designed to get the right foods to bring about a balanced, healthy body and mind. Then you will really be ready for this new world. But many are not aware of this dream, nor are they aware of their God-given freedom. Many will never realize that they have the power right in their hands to keep their body healthy and their minds free from tyranny. We have too many distractions exposed to too many lies, all designed to take away your free will and rational judgment. And you become a slave. For over 28 years, everybody in my family, including the medical community, said I was going to die. They called me delirious. Then decade after decade, more than 28 years, I'm still alive and stronger than ever. To this day, everyone is stunned and literally too old and worn out to bother me anymore. They kept telling me that a total cure could never be done. I finally figured out how to make it all work and arrive at complete recovery. Putting things together in the right way, the best method and the correct methodology doubles the effectiveness. Methodology is everything. I was feeling exhilarated. And I'll tell you more after the break.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun,
health, and freedom.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to The Master Survivor Beyond PhD, and this is Dr. Johnny. I'm going to continue, as you know, methodology is everything, and I was feeling exhilarated and wondering why others were only operating at half speed. It seemed like everybody else was moving at slow motion once I got my total recovery. I soon learned that everyone in the world has their own view of God and of life, and most people did not want to hear about alien ETs, but I kept logging in my 14 spiral notebooks all the memories I had when they come to me from the group mind, and soon I was able to go back into the resourcery archive whenever I wanted. I could see the difference between my ego, the God in my life, and information I found in the group mind of the grays. They're all separate compartments. Most of the key insights and critical recovery protocols were nowhere to be found in conventional medicine or natural healing, but with all my experience and then in the group mind of the grays, I found not only what worked for me, but also for all my patients. I found my recovery, God, and good health all myself. Now that hepatitis was gone, I sure did not want to get it again. I sure did not want to get trapped into some bad habits of friends and family. My brother kept telling me, a cat has 9 lives, you must have 20. I never knew when my good fortune would run out, so I prayed even harder to be right with God. I was not lucky, you know, it wasn't luck, but instinctively I knew it was all about survival. I had beat 3 of the biggest curses on mankind, alien mind control, cocaine addiction, and hepatitis and cirrhosis takeover of the liver. I beat them all, 3 of them. I could not let those curses destroy me. This was the secret of life. Making it through the things that would kill most people. This is why I'm the master survivor. In the AA meetings, we were always hearing about a member who went back out drinking or drugging, and then a few weeks later, they died. It was common. It was common. Well, where's Danny? Well, Danny started drinking again, and you know, and he died. Very sobering, to say the least, pun intended. In 1995, the tough guys in my kung fu class told me I was getting good enough at some of the animal moves that one day I would really get hurt or killed. So I learned esoterically how to avoid a fight. From my alien mind melt experience, the Resourcery Archive, I learned one thing. Our enemy is already here, and they want our free will. Mind control is bigger than ever, especially in the medical healthcare field. If I had gotten that liver transplant back in 1992, I would not be here today in 2023. I'm happy to be delirious and delighted I have my own liver. I know if I maintain control of my mind and keep my body in top shape, I will fulfill all my dreams. I am the master survivor, and my work is truly beyond PhD. Are you confused about what's going on today and you need help? The truth will set you free, and America and the world needs the Master Survivor Program more than ever. This has been a culmination of my laboratory work and training of medical doctors and helping my patients for over 40 years. For more information, just go to themastersurvivor.com. And you can come to the expo in Las Vegas in September and hear my full speech about the alien abduction and get my book hard copy at the table, The Master Survivor Beyond PhD. So next week I may go into another part of the Master Survivor program that people have been asking me about. But for now, I'm going to go into politics, that everybody wants to know what's going on, you know, the things in the world. And if you heard last week's show, I went into depth and brought you into the JAG tribunal courtroom of the former FEMA director Brock Long, and finished the show stating that the execution was set on the following morning. The military adheres to protocol, and Long was hanged in Guantanamo Bay Monday this past morning, July 10th, sealing the fate of yet another deep state stooge befit of morality and lacking integrity. And like so many deep staters before him, he died without dignity, sniveling and murmuring about his innocence. His mourning was typical of condemned prisoners who had mere hours to live. And, you know, he got up at 5 a.m. and he was given a safety razor to shave, of course. He didn't want to do any of that. He didn't want a meal. He just says, no, just get it over with. And he was shown paperwork listing the crimes for which he had been charged and indicted, tried and convicted and sentenced. When asked if he understood the charges, Long just shook his head. Guards took him to the medical staff, and they weighed him and pulled two parts of blood. And, you know, they do that with all the, they do all these blood draws for all the ones getting hanged because they want to see, you know, what's going on in their body, you know, for continued study. This will be the least of our worries, the tech reported, you know, because he winced and tensed and moaned about the tech's bedside manner. He said, that's the least of your worries. And it was explained to him that the hanging was not always a painless, immediate death, even with a long drop hang. But after the exam, and he was escorted to the place in a Hummer to the gallows, he hadn't said a word, neither had his escort. And it's common amongst executions, but Vice Admiral Darce Crandall, in an assembly of military brass, stood in the foot of the gallows as the Marine escort pulled Long from the Hummer and ushered him up the steps of the platform on top of which the hangman, a hangman put the noose over his neck, and an unnamed civilian representative from Donald Trump was standing beside the admiral. We're not going to say who he was, but he works for Trump every day. Brock Long, you've been convicted of treason and sentenced to death to be carried out immediately. Do you have any last words or a statement of contrition? This would be a good time to give it, the admiral said. Rivets of tears streamed from Long's cheeks. I'm innocent, he said. He protested as the hangman fitted the noose around his neck. You don't have to do this. Vice Admiral Crandall gave the signal. The shock in Long's eyes was a prelude to a scream that never came. His mouth opened like a fish for air. He was fortunate. His death was almost instantaneously. A Navy physician noted that the time of death was 10:12 a.m., Monday, July 10th. But let me tell you, there's more. The White Hat Council put FEMA Director Dana Croswell on notice, saying that the despot deep state like her are becoming extinct and ought to settle their affairs while time permits. My source told me from General Smith's office, all 12 members of the White Hat Council authored a joint letter warning FEMA that the military would be scrutinizing the agency's movements with the approach of this year's hurricane season. It said if FEMA agents arrive at hurricane-stricken cities with items besides blankets, food, and water, they will be labeled enemy combatants and dealt with before the pillage of homes and terrorism begins. Former FEMA Director Craig Fugate led the agency during the Obama years, once called hurricane season. He called hurricane season Christmas for FEMA, alluding to the sanctioned theft of private property pilfered from empty homes in mandatory evacuation. So they evacuate all these people, and then they go and rob their homes. FEMA would. They did that regularly. All these disaster areas like Ohio, you know, a very red section of Ohio with all that poison, and they evacuated the whole area. Well, FEMA came and raided their homes. Armed FEMA or domestic terrorists, according to the letter, White Hats had a second reason for sending Criswell the scathing missive. In April, General Smith's office obtained a disturbing FEMA memorandum. Part of it read like a court order discussing how the agency plans to mishandle the next major hurricane strike on the East Coast seaboard of Gulf of Mexico. The memo discusses vaccine encouragement program that encourages agencies to probe hurricane victims about their vaccination status. Specifically, it targets school-aged children whose parents have been obtained religious or medical vaccine exemptions to place kids in public education system. The overriding order would authorize agents of FEMA to ask the parents whether their children have been vaccinated against polio, measles, mumps, rubella, or hepatitis tonight. A long list, and of course, COVID-19. A sickening subsection of the memo allows agents to ask teenage girls if they're vaccinated against the human poliovirus, or HPV, a sexually transmitted infection. Scientists have linked the HPV vaccine to a marked increase in cervical cancer. This is all planned and programmed by our deep state government. Although the document allows FEMA to ask questions, it expressly forbids the recording of personal identifiable health data as defined by the Health Agency Portability Accountability Act in writing or on digital media unless otherwise instructed. It does not say who has the authority to otherwise instruct. Equally concerning is FEMA's ubiquitous secrecy. It is ordered that no recipient of this correspondence shall discuss or disclose any to any other person that the FEMA Emergency Management, Federal Emergency Management, or Department of Homeland Security has contingent plans to initiate vaccine inquiry drills. They are doing drills, practice drills for all this. Any person disclosing or intending to disclose classified contents of this correspondence is subject to disciplinary action as defined in a contractual non-disclosure agreement. This gross overreach is obviously outside the scope of FEMA's mandate, but their leadership has done this before, said General Smith. After 2021 Hurricane Ida, an intense Category 4 storm bombed Louisiana as well. FEMA came to the town with coolers of COVID-19 vaccine and denied residents access to their property unless they presented recent vaccination certificates or got the clot shot on the spot. They're going to do that again. It's all in their plans. Griswold's not-so-clandestine memo prompted White Hat response. The counselor's response named Griswold and Mayorkas domestic terrorists. Mayorkas has fled the country, but we believe Griswold is hiding in the bowels of D.C. General Smith sent a response to FEMA D.C. headquarters. We don't know if she's seen it, he said. I've asked my source why White Hats have tipped their hat, and he said it's not tipping the hat. The foul beasts know we're on their trail. They know that we know their ilk, and they're getting picked off. Nothing was said that shouldn't have been done already. As an aside, we're aware that FEMA was arriving in flood-ravaged Vermont. As you know, we have not heard any stories of FEMA misdeeds in a very liberal and democratic Green Mountain state of Vermont. Deep state is dreaming of ways to kill us, the red state deplorables. Now, this is going to send chills up your spine, but thank God for the White Hats and pray every night for the White Hats and the Secret Space, United States Space Force. 60 chemical rockets went missing from the U.S. Army Chemical Weapons Depot in Kentucky last week as workers, military, and civilian contractors rushed to destroy the old ordnance per the International Chemical Weapons Convention Code, which took effect in 1997 and was jointly and joined by 193 countries, and they're still destroying these weapons and poisonous weapons of mass destruction. The sprawling Bluegrass Army Depot at one time held 51,000 M55 rockets with GB nerve agent, also called sarin, has been resting and sometimes leaking in secure concrete earthen bunkers across the Bluegrass Army Depot's 14,000 acres. The rockets and other nerve and blistering agents have been at the Blue Mountain Army Depot, Bluegrass Army Depot, since the 1940s. In World War I, chemical weapons were used in modern warfare, where they were estimated to have killed at least 100,000. Despite their use being subsequently banned by the Geneva Convention, countries continue to stockpile the weapons until the treaty called for their destruction. Bluegrass Army Depot was one of the remaining chemical weapon depots in the U.S., and the other being at an Army Pueblo Chemical Depot in Colorado, which was decommissioned in the last of its weapons on June 22nd this year. But more than 2,500 military and civilian personnel who purportedly held proper security clearance worked on the final stages of the Bluegrass Army Depot's chemical weapon destruction campaign. The destruction involved moving the rockets to an on-site plant that was completed in 2015 and began destroying the weapons in 2019 using a process called neutralization to dilute the lethal agents for disposal. On July 7th, this last week, U.S. Army Bluegrass Army Reserve Specialists, the MOS 74Ds stationed at the Army Depot, conducted the office of Colonel J.D. Kersley, the 5th Special Forces Group commander and a member of the White Hat Council, saying he had to discuss critical military matter. The colonel's adjunct asked the soldier why he reached out to Special Forces instead of following his chain of command. He says, "Sir, I apologize for the improper protocol, but I don't know who I can trust. I've been led to believe I couldn't trust anyone in this line, so I went to Special Forces, sir." The adjunct implored him to not share his concerns on an open line and instructed him how to send an encrypted message. In the message, the soldier identified himself as a specialist at the Blue Grass Army Depot, tasked for logging serial numbers of weapons scheduled for destruction. He said that 60 GB nerve agent rockets scheduled for demolition on Friday were not in their storage slots. They were missing where he saw them on Wednesday. Now they're gone. And Thursday he had off, and when he came back, they were gone. He wrote no one at the site seemed particularly concerned that he couldn't account for the rockets' whereabouts. He discussed the stringent regulations for weapon destruction. Serial numbers got checked 3 times before a weapon leaves the bunker as it's placed on a truck for transport at the disposal facility. Once a weapon is destroyed, its serial number is stored in a color-coded iPad-like devices. It's changed from red, which is live round, to green, which means destroyed or inert. The rockets were missing. The serial numbers haven't been entirely wiped out from the database, he said. That's unusual. It's made to look like these rockets never existed, he said. The message sent to went to Colonel Kersley, who forwarded on to General Smith. And sure enough, the soldier's story was true, only that someone at the regime's Criminal Defense Department could have purged serial numbers from the restricted database and orchestrated the theft of deadly chemical weapons. One cannot simply walk off with M55 rockets on his shoulder, since each is 75 pounds and 78 inches long. The theft would have to reconcile the theft with armed guards, protected storage facilities, and it's very problematic heist. My source in General Smith's office revealed that the general has confirmed that the agent's version of events and the contract's public statement given by regime officials, it's all true. Illegitimate President Joseph Biden said Friday that the United States had safely destroyed all stockpiled chemical munitions, adding, "We now are free of chemical weapons." Well, that's not true, because they had all those, 19 missiles missing. Or it's more than that. But anyway, yet he announced publicly that we're safe and free of chemical weapons. White Hat investigated the disappearance, declining to speculate why the deep state would bungle obsolete weaponry as it can access modern tech at a greater lethality. Good news, though, the United States Special Forces and chemical weapons specialists recovered the GB rockets that inexplicably damaged and vanished from what could have been a real disaster for sure, and disappeared from an impregnable concrete bunker at the Army Blue Cross Weapons Depot in Kentucky, according to my source in General Smith's office. White Hats began investigating the mysterious disappearance Friday night after a soldier told them about 60 M55 sarin gas rockets were missing from the storage racks, and that someone in position of power had removed their serial numbers from the database. He believed the disappearance occurred maybe Thursday or early Friday morning when he was off his shift. My source said that General K. cash in favors. He called him in as far as he could find to acquire security recordings that showed protocol violations, evidence of rockets leaving the base. Sure enough, they narrowed it down more and more. And two cameras inside the bumper were disabled, but three exterior cameras that, if working, would show persons or vehicles. And even with today's tech, these old bunkers were never fitted with biometric security, just good old-fashioned keys, and that, you can imagine, can have access. You can fake and make a counterfeit key real quick. But as far as we know, there are only two sets on the base, two sets of keys. The commander has one, and the other is with the security building. Live footage also fed the security shack. He mentioned that the whistleblower saw no physical evidence of a break-in other than the missing rockets. And so General Smith also reviewed the video of the base's entrances and cameras covering the main gate. Only thoroughfare to weapons, removal, weapons bunkers, had 90 minutes of lost time, identical to the 90 minutes missing in the depot. Two guards, civilian contractors, could have been protecting the main gate at the time, that should have been protecting the Bluegrass Army depot. Was atypical Army post, 70% of its personnel, 700 personnel, through, although 2,500 have rotated in and out during the chemical depot decommission campaign, or civilian contractors, including private security. In May, the Secretary Lord Austin, Defense Secretary, said the Bluegrass Army Commander Brett A. Azarin to increase private security to allow soldiers more flexibility. He said to increase private security, even though no soldiers complain about being overworked. In fact, General Smith's investigation revealed that Bluegrass Army Depot soldiers had expressed concern that a growing number of civilian contractors heightened the risk of security breach. As part of the investigation, General Smith reached out to Azarin, who had left Bluegrass Army Depot ahead of the 4th of July holiday and then returned to the evening of July 7th, after the rockets had gone missing. When the general inquired about the rockets and asked to see security footage, Azarin denied the request, said the Marines had no business meddling in Army affairs, and he told him to forward any concern to Lloyd Austin. Meanwhile, Azarin said he wasn't authorized to discuss chemical weapon destruction campaign with anyone outside his immediate command. Well, General Smith immediately got video from other sources, and as for Azarin, he is very suspicious, and he's under scrutiny by the White Hats. And General Smith wasn't about to let those rockets go missing. On Saturday, General Smith and the 5th Special Forces Group Commander Brent Linderman, very sharp guy, recalled a Special Forces detachment from an ongoing assignment and investigating famous Hollywood producer. They brought them all in, and they took them off the child sex trafficking ring investigations and put them all on this case for the missing rockets, my source said, and took priority, at least temporarily. The general recruited trustworthy the 48th Chemical Brigade to aid in the recovery in case rusty rockets had sprung leaks. White Hats canvassed the nearby cities, Richmond, and Barrera, and Kirksville, and got their first clue Sunday morning when the owner of a gas station on Route 25, a few miles north of the Bluegrass Army Depot, reported having seen suspicious 18-wheeler stop for fuel early Friday morning. He thought it was suspicious that the driver wore Army fatigues without a name tag, and that the occupants appeared to be civilian dressed in black. A lot of military traffic goes through the area, and the owner of the gas station was familiar with the patterns. Military travel and military vehicles and civilian vehicles, he told Special Forces, only rarely had he seen military and civilians traveling together. Never a soldier without a name tag. He was sure of it because of the soldier, if he was one, used the restroom. His cameras, fortunately, were working and showed the truck leaving the station north and not clear enough to get the license plates, but the tractor trailer's conspicuous emerald cab gave Special Forces a clue to follow, though it already could have been deposited the cargo or any number of airports or shipping ports along the central eastern seaboard. Nevertheless, Special Forces worked with the leads they had and putting them together and worked with detectives like a science fiction, investigation novel, real Sherlock Holmes here. Meanwhile, General Smith at Camp Pendleton pooled White Hat resources to cast a wide net. Additional Special Forces joined the hunt and did, as did the soldiers of the 75th Ranger Regime and Marines from Camp Lejeune's 2nd Marine Division. This is the biggest operation to date, my source said. The White Hat Council somehow obtained traffic cam footage and tracked the 18-wheeler from a gas station in Richmond to Lexington to Louisville, then into Indiana and north toward Indianapolis. The trail went cold at Edinburgh, about 50 miles south of Indianapolis, and 3-hour drive from Bluegrass Depot. Our fear was the truck had stopped along at Edinburgh, the weapons got moved to another vehicle, and something like that would have happened if we weren't very lucky, very fast. But Special Forces sped to Edinburgh, a general arranged for choppers to shuttle and monitor the Rangers, now in Virginia, to the truck's last known location. They converged in Edinburgh to approximately the same time and fanned out, expanding a circle, searching for roads that didn't have any traffic cameras. At 3 o'clock p.m. on Sunday of last week, Special Forces spotted a tractor trailer with a green cab on an isolated stretch of road over Plover Pit Lake. Thermal scan showed the engine was cold and the cab empty of passengers. They expected to find an empty trailer, but all the missiles were in there. And they put on the protective gear and used infrared detectors to check for nerve agent vapors and broke the lock. And the rockets were in there. No sign of a driver or passengers. Someone, he added, had retrofitted the interior with racks designed to safely cradle the rockets. Now it was sitting there for a darn long time Friday morning until late Sunday afternoon, unattended, before we arrived. He said abandoning the truckload of all these weapons had made no sense. The general assumed that the occupants expected another driver to come along and drive it to its final destination, but again, you'd think they'd have timed it or planned it even better, or something happened to delay the relief crew. Who knows? We weren't going to look at a gift horse like this in the mouth. My source added that the general and his staff debated on whether to lay a trap for the deep staters that happened along or somehow wanted to commandeer the truck. General Smith prudently picked the second choice, wondering how many deep staters might arrive and search for the stolen cash. What firepower might bring? His primary concern was to deprive the thieves of their would-be bounty of weapons of mass destruction. It wasn't an easy choice. General Smith has no qualms about killing traitors. We believe that the Biden administration is involved because the Biden made a public statement that all chemical weapons were destroyed and never said a word more. that any were missing. The rockets now reside in a truly secure location and will be destroyed safely as planned. The whistleblower is under White Hat protection. I want to say one more thing. We were firmly against the U.S. security state and billions of cameras watching every movement. We'd die on that hill with all those cameras on them. But in this case, we're thankful they were there. We saw that blue cab truck. The issue isn't closed. We'll find those who took the rockets and who had hired them, my source said. And just to know, folks, things, the White Hats are working around the clock, even around the world. Leaders of the Khazarian Mafia, the notorious Swiss-based Octagon Group, tried to both threaten and beg China for more money last week and were told to buzz off, Asian secret society sources say. The scene was in Tianjin, China, where Octagon leaders like Klaus Schwab Rothschild and Swiss President Alain Berset and other flunkies gathered for their summer Davos meeting in China. Schwab attempted to butter up China by saying, "We must recognize that China is at best the best superpower in the world." He'll say anything just to get some money. Then, in a moment of brown nosing to China that will go down in the history books, U.S. fake Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen bowed repeatedly to Chinese Vice President He Yunfeng. "I saw the videos. He Yunfeng did not bow back. He continued to walk by." This is not the same as U.S. officials bowing to Japanese officials, because Japanese also bow back, symbolizing equality and mutual respect, not subservience or humility. Chinese must have felt glee as they recalled how the first Opium War started with the first British ambassador to China, Lord George Macartney, who refused to kowtow before the Chinese emperor in 1792. And by the way, Queen Elizabeth II, before being killed, did apologize to the Chinese for the Opium Wars, but still refused to bow before China. The background for all this can be seen, and, you know, there's videos out about it. I watched them showing the BRICS have economically completely overtaken the Octagon Group and that controls the G7. In any case, the Chinese are now fooled by the graveling of the Octagon Group servants. They recall how after mass murder attack against Fukushima, Japan, in March 11, 2011, Japanese slave minister Shinzo Abe told the Davos meeting of January 2014 that China was like Germany before World War I. The German Empire was broken up after that war, and Germany was divided into small countries. The message was that China was going to be attacked by Russia, Japan, and NATO, etc., and divide it into five squabbling states. The plan was to make sure China never again posed a threat to the Khazarian Mafia. Of course, the Chinese didn't trust the people who stuck up to them, and after failing to kill them either. After being rebuffed by China, Schwab went to Japan to meet slave Prime Minister Fumi Kishida. Japanese Yagarasu secret society sources say Schwab also left Japan empty-handed. The Yagarasu, which is the Japanese underworld, they're working with the White Hats. Oh, yeah. So having failed to break up China and having failed to suck up to China, the Khazarian Mafia are beginning to make vile threats of mass murder. Klaus Schwab Rothschild told the audience in China, "Our generation has reached a turning point," he said, "confronted by truly existential problems, climate change, exploitation of nature, nuclear possible incidents, or even worse, extreme poverty and viruses, all this which they created, by the way. And he says, this could all lead to the extinction of large sums of our planet. Xerian Mafia engineered climate change and all the other forest fires in Canada. Octagon member Berset, president of Switzerland, followed by saying the post-war order is currently experiencing the greatest crisis, after saying that solidarity with Ukraine is essential, he said, after also citing climate change, pandemic, war, migration, proliferation of challenges, as he noted, around 350 million people in 82 countries are in acute danger of hunger, and that 200 million more then would fall to the pandemic and the world war started, he said. Also noted, before the war, 90% of grain to poor countries in Africa came from Russia and Ukraine. Well, that's a lie, by the way, because Russia found ways to keep sending its grain to countries in need. So the leaders of the rule-based world order are saying they will kill us with weather warfare, which is climate change, bioweapons, which is the pandemic, war, which is how they do these color revolutions, illegal immigration, which is, you know, making our southern border porous, and immigration of military-aged men, and engineering starvation unless we submit. These threats come after Khazaria Mafia leaders failed at a multifaceted attempt to get protection from the upcoming war crimes tribunals by the West. They know they're being hunted down. They're reaching for straws here. The first sign of the secret mission was a trip by Bill Gates to China in June 16th, where he offered his bioweapon and computer secrets in exchange for protection. The Chinese know he's a mass murderer and took his gifts while politely declining to offer legal protection. For reference here, you can watch Gates wish everyone gets malaria with all his mosquitoes that he's launched around the world, not just the poor people. When Gates failed, the next thing we saw was Bill Clinton, Rockefeller, and Alex Soros visiting the fake Pope Francis to seek protection. If you recall, Tony Blair and George Bush Jr., W., visited Pope Maldek the 16th after the Iraqi war in a similar bid to get protection from war crime prosecution. In that case, Blair was giving witness protection after singing like a canary while Bush was executed. This time, however, they were supplicating to fake who replaced the Pope. He was murdered in 2020. He's now a masked actor. In case you haven't seen it, a link showing the current Pope Francis is a rubber mask phony. We asked the P3 Masons, Freemasons, to explain who's giving the orders to the fake Pope. They told us that it's the Jean-Baptiste de Franucci, the head of the Vatican Bank. If you follow this career after becoming head of the Vatican Bank, the trail will lead to a company called Invesco. From there to Wilbur Ross, from there to Octagon Group in Switzerland. The hijacking of the papacy by the Octagon Satanists is why the Archbishop Carlaro Vigani is setting up a new entity to protect true Christmas inside the Catholic Church, who are being persecuted by the fake Pope. He did a speech I sent out to my friends. He's talking about a world gathering to go up against these criminals. And I like this guy, Carlaro Vigano. In any case, by going to a fake Pope, Clinton, Rockefeller, and Alex Soros were in fact asking the Rothschilds for protection. The problem is the Rothschilds themselves are in no position to save them. This is why, in turn, they went to the Chinese and were rebuffed. This means they have nowhere left to hide on this planet. Of course, a lot of us are impatient for war crimes tribunals to begin. Publicly, is taking a month of Sundays. We're tired of waiting, and we want to know, you know, and have them start already. The answer we get both from the British MI6 and the Russian FSB is something known as power transition theory. I'll say that again, power transition theory. They explain that it was better to wait for the wounded lion to die than to attack him when he's still hurt because he's dangerous. The current Western power structure is imploding. It is better to wait for the implosion to fully take place before building a replacement can begin, they argue. For sure, even the Federal Reserve is now admitting in a huge understatement that back of the envelope calculations indicate recent rate hikes will have to largely affect on investment and employment. So they're asking everybody to get to work and invest in their treasury bonds. Anyone with a calculator can figure out going from 0 to 5% interest will destroy the financial system that we have over time. Nevertheless, waiting for the system to implode is not very satisfying because we're seeing so many efforts by the Khazarian Mafia to buy time by promising all sorts of good things in 2025. At the same time, we see them pushing New Age nonsense about some sort of photon belt, ascension to fifth dimension, any kind of hopium you can imagine. And, you know, if you don't ascend in time, you know, 90% of the population, that's all a bunch of bull. Then the survivors will get their med beds and the magic machines, and it'll all make everything okay. In other words, please wait until we can kill you. Because 2025 is when they want to do their fake alien invasion. They don't have it ready to do yet. They're also in the midst of a last-minute power grab. The World Economic Forum is calling on governments around the globe to eliminate physical cash and roll out digital money. An MI6 source promises that it will require a court order for any government to interfere to a digital currency transaction. So they're going to push it out whether you want it or not. However, as we see, with truckers in Canada having their bank accounts frozen because they didn't want mandatory vaccines, we do not trust them. Here we can see that, you know, they're up to their old tricks again. And how to explain the government's use of digital currencies to prevent people from buying things like ammunition, drugs, and pornography. I don't know about you, but I am sure a lot of this do not want to prevent the governments from buying ammunition, drugs, and pornography. They want to catch them. So Polish intelligence warns that the European Union is now taking final steps toward the digital identity for every citizen that will be stored in their application and smartphone. Soon it will be no vaccine, no groceries. You can count on it. Some banks in New Zealand and Australia have begun to not hold any physical cash. These psychopaths want to get rid of cash, so people are forced to go digital. You can be sure that they will try anything and similar in Canada very soon. Take a look at the criminals, Chrystia Freeland, as she introduces grocery saving rebates the same week as the second carbon tax implementation. The other power grab is by WHO, which is still pushing for the right to grab global totalitarian power for any emergency they decide. The WHO is unelected, you know, the World Health Organization is an unelected, democratically immune, tax-exempt group. The richest men in the world control 80% of the money that goes to the WHO, MP, you know, Minister Prince Andrew Brigandon told the EU Parliament before urging governments around the world to resist this power grab. We're getting what we deserve now. We're a flock of sheep, he says, thinking we could ignore politics and not study law and live to our own pleasure. Resistance is happening now, though, as countries like Russia and UK and the US have begun defunding the WHO, which is the World Health Organization. So Russia, the UK, and now the US have stopped giving money to the WHO. The U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Appropriations, for example, is recommending cutting funding for the WHO and terminating its involvement with the World Economic Forum. With the failure of the WHO power grab, now the UN itself is asking for emergency powers that will allow it to lead a common agenda for all nations during a complex global shocks, which they themselves will create, such as a new pandemic. Of course, they themselves will be the source of these shocks. The following, you know, is they're going to try to pull anything. You're going to see anything and everything, and then a few days later, you won't see it at all. There's going to be so many things thrown at your face. Some of it won't even come true. It's all fake. And then they'll pull some false flag to make it look real. They're not your friend. They're not your, you know, don't trust them anymore. They're not your, they're not your tired, poor, huddled masses, as we're led to believe. Funded by your treasonous U.S. government, they are heading to your neighborhoods to murder, rape, and pillage and replace you. You heard me read about the FEMA's directives. They want to take out any resistance, which right now they see as the red state Trump supporters, the patriots, people who think for themselves. These are their enemies, and they're trying to destroy us. This is why we strongly encourage everyone and anybody who is in their power to make sure the Khazarian Mafia are not giving until 2025, but are removed now. There are plenty of signs the resistance is close to victory. The Hunter Biden story's case in point. We can see all that coming to fold. And in all the biolabs of Ukraine is being exposed, the coronavirus, you know, before the pandemic. It is interesting to hear cocaine was discovered in the White House, and now everybody's talking about that, even the left. And the fact that Secret Service could not cover this up appears that, you know, the corporate media is a sign of resistance at work. They're turning. And another sign, watch illegal Governor Katie Hobbs at being confronted at the gym about the stolen election. She just ignored them. Citizen journalists do not let these people in public without being carefully scrutinized with their cell phones and cameras and confronted by the truth. Another truth, the elite is being confronted with its mass murder and organ theft, pedophilia. Example, you know, we saw links to organ theft operation, presumably by, you know, the Khazarian Mafia in Ukraine. In it, you can see multiple bodies of people who have had their organs removed. You can see the pictures. It's grisly. As people who said in the notes, you can see from this partially coagulated blood that is not fake. Also, many jaws are open and feet are already turning blue. This is real, and this is a warning. It's now coming out. People got to face this. But how do you get above all this? Friends, I'm just telling you. You heard me this time talk about my health program, TheMasterSurvivor.com. you know, or the Master Survivor program. That's your way out, is to become a Master Survivor. Even if you did the whole program starting out, it's just $600. And then after that, you have a maintenance of about maybe $20 a month. And then every 6 months, you do another hair tissue mineral analysis, $226. I assure you, it's less than $1,000 a year to be a Master Survivor. It's less than $1,000 a year to get complete recovery, to get total health, never get sick again, and rise above this madness. Where can you find natural health and attain natural health based on food for less than $1,000 a year? Well, you can find it with Dr. Johnny on TheMasterSurvivor.com. Just go to TheMasterSurvivor.com, scroll down, and click on the Master Survivor Program. At the very least, you could get a master's, you know, do number one, which is the hair tissue mineral analysis, $226. And there I can give you your full consultation and your roadmap to recovery. That's all it takes. Every 6 months, $226, and then whatever supplements you need based on your tests, and that comes only from the lab based on your chemistry, it's less, most cases, than $150 a month. But that will keep you from getting ever sick again. So less than $1,000 a year, you can become a Master Survivor and never get sick again. And you can rise above all this madness that we're facing. I'm talking, you know, if you're working with me, I hope you get rid of the problems of graphene oxide. I mean, there's a lot of things that I know that you don't hear in public, and I don't share it because I don't want anybody to know, because I only have it for my patients. Like I told you in the beginning of the show, I learned a lot of this from the group Mind of the Grays, and I found out in the dark source of the internet to find out what was true and put it in the Master Survivor program. So be a Master Survivor, folks. Have a good week. This is Dr. Johnny, over and out.
Now that you see how blatantly the midterms have been stolen, how many other times have you been played? The Green New Deal, the pandemic and the vax, Sandy Hook and the courts, the missing gas chambers, bio and chem labs in Ukraine, Bill Binney, Catherine Horton, Nick Kohlerstrom, Uli Damagard, Tina Pollard-Sachs, and many more. You don't want to miss my third annual False Flags and Conspiracy Virtual Conference, 3 to 4 December 2022. 24 speakers, 26 presentations. Check it out at jameshfetzer.org. This one is for history.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.